Welcome to Civics and Coffee. My name is Alicia, and I am a self-professed history nerd. Each week, I'm going to chat about a topic on U.S. history and give you both the highlights and occasionally break down some of the complexities in history and share stories you may not remember learning in high school, all in the time it takes to enjoy a cup of coffee. Hey peeps, welcome back. Happy May Day. This week's episode is a listener request. A good friend of the pod, Peter, requested I dive into the history of capital punishment in the United States. And while I knew it was going to be dark and pretty twisted, I definitely was not prepared for all the details I found while researching. So this week, I'm covering the history of the death penalty in the United States. When did it start? How has it evolved? And just how many methods are there? As this is an episode that details the history of execution, please use your discretion before deciding whether or not younger fans of the show should take a listen. There are a lot of gruesome details up ahead. So grab your cup of coffee, peeps, and perhaps a security blanket. Let's do this. Capital punishment, whose meaning is derived from the Latin word capitalis, which translates to head, is not an American invention. History shows laws all the way back to the 18th century BC in the Code of King Hammurabi of Babylon. Punishment by death for certain crimes continued throughout history, and by the 1700s, Britain prescribed the death penalty for over 200 different infractions. Death by the state could be in the form of boiling, burning at the stake, hanging, beheading, or my personal unfavorite, drawing and quartering. Drawing and quartering was an overtly barbaric practice where the convicted individual was drawn, which means they were dragged by a horse to the gallows, hung, but not usually to death, and then their limbs were tied to four horses, and said horses took off in different directions, resulting in the dismemberment of the convicted. So dark, and I'm only getting started, peeps. When the colonists arrived on the shores of the New World, they brought the concept and practice of capital punishment along with them, and wasted no time in using it. The first recorded execution in the New World was in 1608 in the colony of Jamestown. Captain George Kendall was sentenced to death as a result of accusations of being a spy for Spain, believing if he escaped, he would share security secrets about the colony. Kendall was executed by firing squad. While it evolved over the years and likely looked much different in 1608, death by firing squad involved strapping the inmate to a chair and placing a black hood over their head. The chair was surrounded by sandbags to absorb their blood, and a doctor was sent in to locate the individual's heart. The doctor would then place a white piece of cloth over the targeted area, and shooters would go into an enclosure about 20 feet away. Each shooter was given a .30 caliber rifle with one round, with one person given a gun with blanks. At the proper command, the executioners would fire their weapon, and the inmate died from severe blood loss. As the new colonies developed, so too did capital punishment laws. In Virginia in 1612, Governor Sir Thomas Bayle enacted the Divine, Moral, and Martial Laws, which allowed for the death penalty to be administered for all sorts of atrocious crimes, like stealing grapes or killing a chicken. In an attempt to curtail capital punishment and provide for a more structured use, Thomas Jefferson introduced a bill to the Virginia legislature in 1779. Bill 64, as it's commonly known, suggested a repeal of the death penalty for all crimes except for treason and murder. Jefferson argued that while society required punishments for those who perpetrate crimes against the Commonwealth, the punishment of death for all crimes was a bit excessive, writing, quote, "A member thereof, committing an inferior injury, does not wholly forfeit the protection of his fellow citizens, but after suffering punishment in proportion to his offense, is entitled to their protection from all greater pain, so that it becomes a duty in the legislature to arrange in a proper scale the crimes which it may be necessary for them to repress, and to adjust thereto a corresponding gradation of punishments. End quote. Unfortunately, the other members of the assembly did not agree, and the bill lost by one vote. Another piece of the execution process brought to American shores was the act of public execution. The belief of the time was that capital punishment, or the threat of it, would be a crime deterrent. In order to ensure everyone had their taste of what could become of them should they break the law, the executions were often held in public venues and attended by most of the town, including women and children. In some states, schools would close so the teachers could bring their students to witness the execution. In the beginning, colonists viewed execution not so much as a punishment for a criminal, but a path towards redemption for the sinner. They tended to focus less on the crime itself and instead prayed for their soul in death. Ironically enough, though the public executions were meant to be a demonstration of consequences, many who showed up to the executions treated them like it was a party. There was drinking, rowdiness, and yes, crimes. This chaos prompted prisons to move the executions inside the facility itself, which is where we get the term death row. One method of execution used frequently until 1890 was hanging. The process is pretty difficult to stomach, so again, fair warning. While initially straightforward with a noose around a neck, hanging evolved as people made strides to improve its success rate. For example, some inmates were weighed the day before their execution to allow for a trial run with a sandbag by the executioners. This trial run helped them determine how long the rope should be. Too long, and the inmate could be decapitated. Too short, and the death could take up to 45 minutes. Ropes were boiled and stretched to eliminate spring and coiling, and the knot lubricated with wax or soap to ensure a smooth sliding. Prior to the execution, the inmate's hands and legs were tied, and they were blindfolded. The noose would be affixed on their neck and the knot placed behind the left ear. When a gallows was involved, the trap door would be opened and the inmate fell through, with their weight acting as the method to attempt a fracture dislocation of the neck. However, this rarely resulted in a quick death. Opposition to the death penalty has come in waves over the years. One of the earliest recorded opponents, Dr. Benjamin Rush, was a founder of the Pennsylvania Prison Society and a signer of the Declaration of Independence. He argued that capital punishment was not a deterrent to criminal activity, and instead had the opposite effect. This assertion gained the support of Benjamin Franklin and Philadelphia Attorney General William Bradford. Bradford eventually led the charge in prescribing degrees of murder based on an individual's culpability, and mandated that only those convicted of first-degree murder should be subject to the death penalty. In 1794, the state of Pennsylvania repealed the death penalty for all crimes except first-degree murder. The capital punishment abolitionist movement spread throughout the Northeast in mid-19th century, and in 1846, Michigan became the first state to abolish the death penalty for all crimes aside from treason. Other states aimed to reform their death penalty laws by allowing discretionary capital punishment, which gave sentencing discretion based on an individual's circumstances as opposed to an automatic death upon conviction. However, with the onset of the Civil War and the focus on freeing enslaved individuals taking center stage, the fervor over the death penalty waned. In an effort to improve the experience of death for those convicted of a capital crime, states looked into new creative technologies to make an inmate's death, quote, painless. The first, I'd say, quote-unquote, improvement on the execution was the creation of the electric chair. Developed in 1888 in New York, the device was put to use in 1890 to execute convicted murderer William Kemmler. Unfortunately, as you'll hear, these improvements rarely lead to a painless death. Another warning here, to prepare for death by electric chair, the inmate was shaved and tied to a chair with straps across their chest, arms, legs, and groin. They were then fitted with a metal skullcap-shaped electrode, which was attached to their head over a sponge dipped in saline. The sponge could not be too wet or too dry it was like the Goldilocks of executions. If it was too wet, it would short circuit. Too dry, it would create too much resistance for the electrical charge. So, assuming the sponge contained the exact right amount of moisture, the prisoner was then blindfolded, and upon the warden's command, the executioner would flip a switch to trigger an electric current to run through the body, anywhere between 500 and 2,000 volts, for about 30 seconds. The inmate's pulse would be checked to confirm if it worked or not, and if not, another 30-second jolt of electricity would be sent through the body, and this process would continue until the inmate was declared dead. In William Kemmler's case, the first one to die by electrocution, the doctors originally believed him to be deceased, only to discover a few minutes later this was false, and so they doubled the voltage and ran 2,000 volts through him, just to make sure the job was done. Those who have witnessed the style of execution report the smell of burning flesh and eyes bursting out of their sockets. Still striving for that perfect method of painless execution, Nevada elected to use death by gas in 1924. The first man to die by gas, Guy John, was also a convicted murderer who killed a rival gang member. In the first attempt at gassing, John's cell was filled with the poisonous gas while he slept. But due to poor ventilation, this process failed, and so an airtight chamber was developed. For this method, the inmate was placed in the chamber and strapped down. In the room was a pail of sulfuric acid. Once the inmate was sealed in, the warden gave the signal to the executioner, who would drop crystals of sodium cyanide into the pail. This caused a chemical reaction that released hydrogen cyanide gas. The prisoner could survive only as long as they were able to hold their breath. Once they inhaled, the gas would begin eating away at their lungs, and death would come via hypoxia, or the deprivation of oxygen to the brain. The inmate would be awake for this process, not immediately losing consciousness. While most states have moved on from the gas chamber as a method for execution, three states brought it back in 2015: Oklahoma, Mississippi, and Alabama. However, instead of cyanide, they plan to use nitrogen to deprive the brain of oxygen. As of this recording, no one has been put to death by this method. The reason for using this instead of a lethal injection? Difficulty in obtaining the drugs required for the procedure. Since the 70s, the primary method of execution has been by lethal injection. The first state to adopt this process was Oklahoma in 1977, I guess before they decided it was just too difficult to get the drugs. The first individual put to death by lethal injection was Charles Brooks on December 2, 1982. Lethal injection is touted as the most humane version of execution due to the inmate being put to sleep before the lethal cocktail is administered. However, critics of the procedure point to the number of mistakes that occur. The most common issue arises from incorrect IV placement. And since doctors are ethically barred from participating in executions, the individuals who place the IV are insufficiently trained orderlies or prison staff. This has led to a number of attempted executions where the IV was placed directly into the muscle instead of the vein, causing immense pain to the inmate. For death by lethal injection, the inmate is strapped to a gurney where an orderly places two IVs, one is the main one and the second being the backup. Connected to the IVs are tubes that are fed through the wall and led to a bank of IV drips. First, a saline solution is started. At this point, the viewing room is opened and the inmate is allowed to make a final statement. Then, at the warden's signal, the first drug, sodium thiopental, is administered, which is supposed to put the inmate asleep. Then, Pavilion, or pancuronium bromide, I think is how it's pronounced, is pushed through the IV, which acts as a paralyzing agent and stops the individual from breathing. Finally, potassium chloride is sent to stop the heart. The legality of the death penalty has been brought before the Supreme Court a few times, and they've consistently held capital punishment is constitutional. Proponents of the death penalty point to the Fifth Amendment, which states no individual shall be deprived of their life or liberty without due process. While critics of capital punishment point to the Eighth Amendment, which bars cruel and unusual punishments. In a 1972 case, Furman v. George, the Supreme Court held that lack of consistent standards and instructions to juries when determining whether to apply the death penalty was unconstitutional. The court held that if states wished to have the death penalty, they must come up with a series of standards for juries to review while in deliberations. While this led to a temporary moratorium of the death penalty in the United States, by 1976, the moratorium was basically over as 37 states wrote new laws to address the court's concern about the arbitrary manner in which the death penalty was applied. As of 2021, 22 states and Washington, D.C. have outlawed the death penalty, and 3 states have governor-imposed moratoriums. On average, an inmate given a sentence of death will sit on death row for 16 years before facing execution. Thanks again, Peter, for requesting this episode topic. While I might never, ever sleep again, thanks to all the details of executions running through my mind, it was a pretty fascinating journey. If you would like to request an episode topic, hit me up at the website, www.civicsandcoffee.com, or you can find me on the Facebook at Civics and Coffee, the Twitter at CivicsPod, or the Instagram, Civics and Coffee, all one word. Thanks for sticking with me, peeps. See you next week. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of Civics and Coffee. If you want to hear more small snippets from American history, be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for joining me, and I look forward to our next cup of coffee together. As of this recording, no one has been put to death by this sodium thiopental is administered, which is supposed to put the inmate to a Proponents of the death penalty point to the Fifth Amendment, which states no event. Oh, you.